I'm a journalist, a husband, a father, a grandfather, and an African American. I live in the fastest growing public housing tract in America. In 1981, I was a reporter for WUHY-FM and president of the Philadelphia Association of Black Journalists. Currently, I'm a writer and public radio commentator. I've been a resident on Pennsylvania's death row for more than 15 years. Tune in to hear my regular reports. From death row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
And from the studios of WBAI, we're Paul DiRienzo and Miss Jo Marie Moosey. And Miss Moosey is just back from performing, so you've had a busy night.
That's right. We started at the hip-hop demo.
And we had a busy day. We were at the hip-hop demo with Conrad Muhammad at the City Hall.
With all the
second time today.
Youth.
It was a little warmer today.
That's right. Well, and not that much warmer. From a girl from Louisiana, it was
I
not what
was
we'd
warm.
Call
the
warm.
The sun was nice.
Well, we kept following the sun.
Yeah. It was a fascinating program of events today. And we had a great time, and we heard a lot of very interesting speeches. And it was amazing to see the youth. It was wonderful to see the youth in New York out there.
Yep, they were all out
their
there,
strength.
Too.
Yeah, really all from the high schools, large numbers of people taking a day off.
Young people, immature old people.
And they weren't there. They weren't there to memorialize Joe DiMaggio, that's for sure. Well, no. You know, the big joke was that the Yankees, how Giuliani had told kids to take the day off to see the Yankee parade.
Right, but he objected to
they objected to taking a day off to protest
to
getting murdered
rights,
by the police. All very interesting. Well, we have the cast is here, so we're going to move on. We have a very fascinating program. We have some members of the cast and crew and producers and et cetera of...
An audience.
The whole crew is here. And we're going to be moving on. Penny Arcade, as you can hear, is here. John, why don't we read our announcements,
yeah,
get that out of the way.
These.
All right, we'll run through the day's
we
announcements.
All the correct phone numbers and everything. All right, so Millions for Mumia, since we just listened to the, what's the name of that CD?
All Things Censored,
all
which
things
is
censored, yeah.
A takeoff on All Things Considered.
I know,
you
right?
know?
I'm so tempted to say All Things Considered.
All Things
time.
Censored, that's the whole thing. It's NPR Censored Mumia, but that's another story.
So Saturday, April 24th in Philadelphia, Millions for Mumia. Everybody come out. Volunteers and funds needed, call 212-633-6646. And the correct number for Mumia 911. This is the National Day of Art to stop the execution of Mumia Abu-Jamal. And
hello?
I just
Sorry.
Went out. Hello? Sonda, give them a call. Thank you for letting me know that that was a misprint on the other flyer. It's 1-888-456-5056. 1-888-456-5056. And they're looking forward to hearing from you and getting the Disabled Artist Network involved. That's Mumia 911, a National Day of Art to stop the execution of Mumia Abu-Jamal that's going to take place on September 11th, 1999. And news from Dos Blancos. They have exhausted all their legal options. Their vacate date is March 31st. And on Saturday the 13th, they're going to have an eviction watch meeting at 2 p.m. and a legal defense benefit party at 8 p.m. Tuesday the 16th at 7 p.m., a barricade-making workshop. So that's Dos Blancos, 713 East 9th Street, and the information line over there to keep up on what's going on because it's
we
happening.
We have a decade of experience under our belt at building barricades these days.
Yeah.
Laurie-san.
Their phone number is 592-3039. They're going to have a lot of events up to the 31st, so call them up and see what's going on. And ABC No Rio, 156 Rivington Street, still has that exhibit, Plain Brown Wrapper, if you haven't seen it yet. That's 156 Rivington Street, and their gallery hours are noon to 3 on Sundays, and Tuesdays and Thursdays, 5 to 8. So check it out. Now, demonstrations. Tomorrow, the citywide Coalition to Remove Giuliani is sponsoring a demonstration from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Department of Justice, 225 Cadman Plaza East in Brooklyn. That's Thursday, March 11th. That's tomorrow, 4 to 6. 225 Cadman Plaza East in Brooklyn. Take the A train to Brooklyn Bridge, F to J Street, M N R to Court Street, or the 2345 to Borough Hall Street. That's the citywide coalition to remove Giuliani. Remove Rudy at hotmail.com or 212-242-4201. 718-859-0857. Thanks, Carlos, for calling that one in. And we've got Saturday, March 13th, 2:30 p.m. at Columbia University, International Affairs Building. That's West 118th Street at Amsterdam Avenue. Saturday, the 13th at 2:30, family members speak out against police terror. This is in support of Amadou Diallo. And Amadou's aunt is going to be there, Iris Baez, mother of Anthony Baez, and other family and friends of people who've been affected by this police brutality. International Women's Day 1999, Sunday, March 14th at Revolution Books, 6 p.m. Speak out, music, dance, and poetry. That's 9 West 19th Street. Revolution Books, Sunday, March 14th, 6 p.m. 212-691-3345. That's on Sunday.
And Joan from Revolution Books was supposed to call in with the list of speakers and people who are going to be attending, but I hear it's going to be quite a list of interesting people. They aren't really listed on there.
No, it isn't listed on here, but I'm sure it's going to be a great
event. She told me it was
going
to be very interesting.
Yeah, that's been over to Revolution Books knows it's a great place. You should check it out. I'm sure it'll be a fun party. And Monday, March 15th, 6:30 p.m., The Legal Right to a People's Militia, 415 Atlanta Avenue, Bond Street in Brooklyn. There's going to be there's speakers, a moderator, Viola Plummer.
Bring your own AK-47.
Attorney Roger Wareham, attorney Jomo Thomas, and the December 12th Movement, and attorney Malik Shabazz, the Million Youth March, and the new Black Panther Party will be there. For information, 212-234-7788. That's the Legal Right to a People's Militia. It's a program about that. Monday, March 15th, 6:30 p.m. at the House of Lord Church, 415 Atlantic Avenue at Bond Street in Brooklyn.
Lock and load.
So there's a lot to go to. Everybody check out some of this and call us back and let us know how it was.
Well, we're going to be moving on now to the main body of our program here on Let 'Em Talk. That's
Ms.
Joan
Penny Moosey. Arcade.
Ms. Penny Arcade is here. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. And we're going to begin with a cut from our show.
No, Mona Lisa. I am Magnum Mouth, Honey Snatched. My flavor changes constantly.
No, Mona Lisa.
I stroll like a sailor. Bullets pass through me and I keep moving.
No, Mona Lisa.
I don't hang around. Sidelong glance, supposition, preposition, have no place in my communication. When I talk,
when I talk,
when I talk,
when I talk,
when I talk, you know exactly what I mean. Mona Lisa has no mouth, no cunt, she stops at the waist.
I hate that bitch.
No, Mona Lisa.
I don't price down, preview, or go on sale, no auction. Dissertated. I cannot be viewed from a different angle. I cannot be seen in a different light.
No, Mona Lisa.
I am no collector's item, no curator's pet. No, Mona Lisa.
She reads the writing on the wall behind her.
When I'm in love.
When I'm in love.
I stay wet all the time.
No, Mona Lisa.
No sidelong manipulation. I never had a father. I never learned how to be. Kind of Lisa sits, I stand. Two lightning bolts in my fists, a crescent moon over my cunt. I don't need special light, special glass, or a smoke-free environment. I am 3D. You can touch me. I touch back, talk back, spit back, bite back.
No Mona Lisa.
No cryptic stare.
No Mona Lisa.
I am a loner.
No Mona Lisa.
I tell you the truth.
No Mona Lisa.
I am ruthless. You are lucky.
Well, Penny Arcade.
Hi.
Welcome to Let 'Em Talk.
Hi, Let 'Em Talk.
How did you pick up a bad reputation?
Well, it's pretty easy to do. As Phoolan Devi, India's famous bandit queen, said in an interview I did with her in 1995, all you have to do in this country is ask for something, and you're considered the bad element. So let's start there. But look at this new digs of... I haven't been to this new BAI.
Oh, the new BAI.
Oh,
that's
Wall
right.
Street, yeah.
Wow, well,
the
new,
right.
New security system.
Oh, that's interesting.
I know.
That's kind of an interesting take on Pacifica and Wall Street, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It is a bit strange. Right from the very beginning, I think people played down that, Wall Street doesn't matter. I mean, these are great digs. It's a nice space. We're getting a good deal.
What a view.
Yeah, nobody ever thought, WBAI at 120 Wall Street.
Steve Post must be jumping up and down in a frenzy, giving out the address of BAI instead of Nixon. It's all changed. Wow.
I think we should give out the details about the show right
yes,
now.
Yes, so absolutely.
That people,
all y'all listening, we need you to come down and see our show, Bad Reputation at Performance Space 122. Wednesdays through Sundays at 8:30 p.m. Performance Space 122 is located at 150 First Avenue at East 9th Street. And it's $15, and it's an incredible show, if I may say so, even though I wrote it. But it has
and star in it.
And star in
and
it.
And directed it.
And directed it with Eric Wallach, who's here too. Mm-hmm. Say hi, Eric.
Hello, New York.
New York. The opening night, we had a member of your listening
That's
audience,
right.
Carlton.
It was fabulous. He came over and met us afterwards.
He came and met me, thought I was Miss Joni Moose. He said, I listen to you every week.
Right on.
I had to...
So we want Carlton to call in because we want him to give a review of the show. One of the listeners that's actually seen it.
Yeah. Our phone number is 212-209-2900, by the way, and people can jump in and join the conversation. By the way, what were we just listening to?
That's No Mona Lisa. The drum track is played by Mecca Bodega. Many of you out there probably have heard Mecca Bodega either in concert or in the subway. They do both. And the record was produced by Chris Rail for Fang Records, and it's available from my website, which you can visit, www.pennyarcade.com. And Bad Reputation has...
Or at the show.
Or at the show.
It's a CD. It's the Bad Reputation Show CD.
It is. It's
recorded there.
Recorded at Dubway. If you need to record something, go to Dubway. They're mm-hmm. wonderful and
so
charming.
You had the old cast go over to the studio?
We went over there and we recorded everything that's basically with music, which is why Miss Joni Moose is not on here. But Miss Joni Moose,
although
Musi,
I'm kindly acknowledged on the CD.
Of course you're acknowledged.
I do appreciate that.
On the CD, and Miss Joni Moose, of course, steals every scene that she's in. Of course,
her scenes are short but very important because they really set up certain major parts of your life, Penny.
That's right.
Because it's an autobiographical show.
Right, she's your alter ego in a lot of senses. You know.
Well, she's a woman. She's an authority figure woman many times, either playing the judge that put me away in reform school, but who noticed that I was an articulate child and decided not to send me to Long Lane Farm, one step before Niantic State Prison, instead sent me to Sacred Heart Academy for Wayward Girls. And
so it's autobiographical,
yes.
Bad Reputation.
Yes,
it's really,
it is.
And it's really sort of a story of your sort of persevering in a situation of... what's the word I'm looking for? You're just persevering.
Trauma.
Yeah.
Extreme trauma.
Extreme trauma. Well, Steve Zentner.
And yet extreme trauma that has a message to a lot of people, because so many people have pain in their lives.
Well, because the
trauma.
World is a horrible place filled with a lot of horrible people, and all of us, have a choice. I mean, a measure of insanity is not the horrible things that happen to you, but how you deal with the horrible things that happen to you. So, you know, sometimes, like people who are listening right now might feel like, God, you know, I'm plagued. I have this thing. Why is this happening to me? There must be something wrong with me. Don't look at it that way. Look at how you're dealing with horrible thing after horrible thing after horrible thing. You still can enjoy a walk. Hey, you're a genius. That's we right. want to know you.
Can you still have fun?
Yeah, if you can still have fun. What did we say? Doomed to live.
That's right. Penny and I are doomed to live.
Doomed to live.
So this performance is basically about, though, the problems faced by a young woman.
By young
particular.
Women,
and,
yes.
And I guess this makes this program here, Let Them Talk, this is our sort of international Women's Day program.
I guess it is. Might as well get it out of the way now, Paul. Let's get that out of our system right away.
We had our Valentine's Day show, and we had our whatever. But anyway,
it's a fascinating, fascinating element that people are very unconscious about, because when it's very different being a bad girl than being a bad boy. When you have a bad reputation as a boy, it usually improves your cachet.
Yeah, it elevates you in a lot of people's eyes.
That's right, and certainly in your friends' eyes, you know. And
a lot of adults think it's cute.
Yeah,
or
I mean,
seductive. Or
seductive, or they're frightened.
Right, or they're afraid of you.
Or they're afraid of
if
you.
If you're a guy and you're 14 and everybody thinks that you've gone all the way, you're a hero.
That's
you're
right.
You're treated like a hero. But if you're the 14-year-old girl he went all the way with, your life is over.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is that you don't even have to, as a girl, you don't even have to actually
do anything.
You don't even have to have sex.
All it has
people
to be is a rumor
a
about
rumor,
you.
And people participate in that rumor not always by speaking, but by maintaining silence.
Why do other women participate in it?
Because they're afraid it's going to rub off on them.
Right. It's what I say in the show, that they're afraid of the guilt by association, and they don't want to go down with a sinking ship. But I think that, you know, basically women compete with women, and women betray women, and it's not just, you know, a cultural issue. I think that it's actually in our biology, which is where second wave feminism and I part ways, because second wave feminism doesn't believe that biology has any impact on our lives anymore. And yet, you know, maybe that'll be true in 4500 AD, but it's certainly not true right now.
Of course, talk to anyone around someone with PMS.
Now, being that this is autobiographical story, it's interesting that you give us a little bit of your background. I mean, Penny Arcade, I mean, you're a nice Italian girl. I mean, I'm a Di Rienzo. I know the scene.
Yeah, well, I mean, I come from a very primitive peasant Southern Italian family. I'm the first one in my family born in America. My mother didn't marry until she was 32. She was a great beauty. And
where are they from in Italy?
Picerno in Basilicata, Lucania. It's where sons kill their fathers.
Oh.
It's very
patricide.
For having sex with their mothers.
No, it's very Appalachian. It's, you know, when you meet people from Florence and you say you're from that part of Italy, they're like, oh, formidable. You know, wow, poverty is so... sexy.
So you speak Italian?
Yeah, I am
Italian.
Speak
Italian for us.
Io non voglio parlare italiano proprio, ma però posso sì voglio parlare. Io parlo un italiano sporco, un italiano crudo. I speak Southern Italian. It's a rough Italian. And
you have tomato sauce on your pasta.
Yeah, that's all we ate. but interestingly enough,
lasagna.
Interestingly enough, my father was insane and was actually worked for the resistance during the war and was like this madman who like hid penicillin in his brother-in-law's house, who was the prefect of police and a major Mussolini fascist, and was a very charming person. Apparently I have a lot of his characteristics, but my mother met him when he was being deported out of New York, when she was going back to visit her mother for the first time since she was 17. And she fell in love with this man and made the one choice of her life. She made one decision on her own without consulting her family, and it was this disaster. And so, as I say in the show, my life was marked by my father's insanity, by his criminal insanity between the age of 4 and 11, or until I was able to become a criminal myself. And I got put away in reform school when I was 14, which, you know...
Now what was the name of this reform school again?
Sacred Heart Academy for Wayward Girls.
That's really its name. It's not a stage name.
No, it's not a stage name.
Although it works so beautifully.
The beauty of my show.
Any listeners out there who might have gone to been there with you or...
It's Sisters of the Good Shepherd. Please call. Any girls? Any girls, I'd love to hear more. There's
212-209-2900.
There's a Sisters of the Good Shepherd on East 17th Street and First Avenue that has 50 girls living there. And, you know, Sisters of the Good Shepherd started out working with women prisons in the 17th and 18th century. So it's very fascinating. And it's the good girl, bad girl thing, the carved in stone, good girl, bad girl thing. I'd love to hear from people who
now, these are
away.
Sisters who weren't like the modern-day sisters who go around in like regular everyday
social
street
workers,
clothes.
Social workers, no.
These
they
wore the whole head-to-foot.
The whole head-to-foot. Beautiful.
And do they still?
No.
Oh, they've come out of the habit.
Well, the thing is that this was all part of, you know, when you hear sisterhood is powerful, people think of that as a feminist term, but actually that came out of the nuns' movement of the early 60s. Where the nuns who were cloistered, meaning that they
wanted to talk.
No, they didn't want to talk. They, of course, as per usual in the Catholic Church, the cloistered orders, both of monks and of nuns, were the intellectuals, people who, like, you know, wanted to be left to their own devices to think and read
all the time.
Right. Entered those orders where they were not allowed to have any interaction with the world per se. So it was among those orders that in the early 1960s with the Ecumenical Council and St. John the 23rd who started.
He's not a saint yet, I don't think.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm calling him a saint. Pope. I liked him, though.
The liberal pope.
I liked him.
He was like for 3 years he was in there and he was, changed the whole church.
Yeah, he was an amazing guy. I liked him. He reminded me of my grandfather.
Right.
I thought he might be my grandfather. But the thing that's...
I went to Catholic school for 10 years.
So I know, and it's amazing that you're as well off as you are. Usually people are a lot more crazy.
I got thrown
crazy.
Out, finally.
Oh, really?
Tossed out.
That's
good.
Yeah.
That's why you're...
I think I wandered out of religion class and ran into the Panthers on the Fordham campus and brought them back into the school.
That was probably the
turning point.
The turning point.
Also, when I used to hang out with those students, right after that, a suspicious fire broke out at the ROTC. I mean...
Really? Interestingly enough.
That didn't add any.
The thing is that, though, I mean, of course, you're, you know, well-versed with liberation theology. You know, there is and always has been an aspect of the Catholic Church that is radical, that is functional, you know. And I think that a lot of the changes in the church and a lot of the real power in the church came out of the nuns and priests. And I, you know, was lucky to be with some quite extraordinary people.
Even I remember, since, you know, one person who's been Catholic trained to another. I remember some of those guys, some of those Jesuits I dealt with. Some of them were pretty cool. They
Barrigans.
Brought me down to the Lower East Side. We used to come down to 3rd Street to the Catholic worker. Yeah,
sure.
They brought us down there. Some of them were, like, very conservative and right-wing, and others would, like, sneak us out to some interesting things. And I think it probably had a good effect on me overall, although I just didn't like being, like, you know, assaulted mentally and physically assaulted by goons. So I think that was one of the reasons I didn't like it. No, but they would. I remember the for guys... In the Catholic world growing up, the big threat was
if you don't shape up, you're going to meet the Irish Christian Brothers. Uh-uh. They were like the mean guys.
Oh, they're also the ones who have problems keeping it in their pants.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
whatever.
Double torture.
That could have been it.
They're being sued constantly in Ireland. It's a
yeah, nightmare. They were the ones we got threatened with. Like, you know, they're going to kick your ass from one end of the city to the other if you don't watch out.
Wow.
And, I went to Fordham, which was more like the little nerdy kids, like the one with the book bags who used to get beat up waiting for the bus on Fordham Road, you know.
But for you, the nuns were kind of a savior, right? I mean, this was better than
being home
of detention or
house of detention.
House of detention.
Or being home in my home, which my mother's side of the family was very, very primitive and very peasant-like. And, you know, I didn't like to study for school, but I liked to read. Which was very confusing to them. You know, why would you be reading if you didn't do your homework? They could understand that. And also because I lived in my imagination, which, of course, peasant Italians are frightened. Well, they don't believe in imagination. You know, my mother would say, oh, in America you have imagination. In Italy we never had imagination. In Italy we didn't need imagination. In Italy we worked. You know, they're obsessive. Southern Italians. I mean, you're not Southern Italian?
Southern Italian.
You are?
Naples, near Naples.
Naples. Yeah. Well, the Italian stock that I come from.
Hard work.
Carlo Levi wrote that famous book, Christ Stopped at Eboli, about the area that I'm from. And they believe that they are just about a quarter of an inch above being animals. They are beasts of burden. That's how they see themselves.
My grandfather came off the boat early 20th century. He was literally stopped at Ellis Island, and they liked the way he could scream in Italian, and he had a very loud, like, aggressive type of guy.
Yeah.
And they immediately drafted him into the army and made him a corporal.
Wow. Really?
And put him to a World War I, put him to work training soldiers who were being drafted into the army right off the boat as they were coming in from Italy and different places.
Really? They're just pulling them right off the boat?
He didn't see.
Was that 1919?
Something like that, yeah. 16? Even earlier. Like it was during the war. It was 1917, something like that. And he was a corporal. And he was very proud. He didn't speak a word of English. And they drafted him, like right there in Ellis Island. And he didn't have to go
voice.
To combat, you know. That was a
the
good
American
part of
way.
It. He got to train the other guys and scream at them and whatever. And they were Republicans. You know, most Italians are Democrats.
Really?
My family are Republicans.
That's very odd because my
they
family
were the ones who don't like the mafia. Like
my families were Republican too.
Yeah, they don't like
which
the mafia.
Which is very odd.
Like
yeah.
Giuliani. Yeah, I would say 80% of Italians are Democrat, but about 20%.
Giuliani though has a lot of emotional problems.
He's got yeah.
I think that there are some issues with toilet training with Giuliani. Because he's so obsessive about the sex industry. You know, it's like that's usually it's like Hitler had that sort of thing too.
He liked to be shit upon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Hitler.
Yeah.
Which one?
But it Which brings one? Up. It does. I mean, you know, the fact that Giuliani needs everything to be so squeaky clean. What about him in the Lion King? He was in like full
yeah.
Lion King.
Did you see
King.
That in the Post?
What yes. is he trying to tell us?
He wants us to forget he dressed in a he was in a
in
dress,
a dress
last
by
year.
Wearing even more outlandish costumes. Somehow it might cloud our memory to that
I
pink outfit.
It.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, he's like reaching.
Well, have
out
you
to
been down to City Hall? Because we've been down the last 2 days yeah. for demonstrations, and you can't believe it. The whole park is completely yeah. fenced off.
Right, right.
There's barricades. I mean,
I know.
The work they do putting out barricades for the demonstrations, I swear to God, they need a whole separate department
right.
for this yeah.
Department of Barricades.
Right.
Well, I mean, the
Maybe
fact
they
is
could go to the workshop
the
at Dos Blancos.
Yeah. The fact is that Giuliani is very thin-skinned, and he really, there was just something I was reading about the way he's dealing with the press and the list of
oh,
what
well,
you're
we have
not allowed
tape after tape of Giuliani screaming.
And he's a real Catholic schoolboy. You ever see the pictures of him? Yeah. I forget what school he went to, but you know,
we have to make up.
They had the high school yearbook picture, and he was like one of those kids we went to school with who like got into it. You know, who really was like.
We got to make a tape.
Liked wearing a suit and tie when he was 14.
Yelling at Paul Di Rienzo. It's got. We've got to make a tape, Paul Giuliani yelling at Paul Di Rienzo.
Oh, yeah.
It's so funny.
Oh, yeah, he
Paul could enrage
times.
Him.
Yeah, easily.
What do you say to him?
Just ask him. He hates being asked tough questions.
Any question he doesn't want to hear.
Any question he doesn't want to hear.
And he screams?
One time,
that is irresponsible.
I know, it's great. No, I wish I had the tape. We'll have to put the tapes together. It's happened many times. It started, I think, the first thing, you know, I would often have good questions when I go to press conferences. For no other reason, I thought I was the only person in the media who actually, like, you know, would
thought
about a good question to ask him. You know, most of them are just, really, it's just a job, and they're just going there in and out, and they want as little trouble as possible. And I would, like, be, wow, I got a shot at asking a really tough question to Rudy Giuliani. I'd be on the number 9 bus coming from the East Village, like reading the New York Times, looking for something. And you'd always, if you read the paper really carefully, you always find some embarrassing little factoid buried in an article.
Right.
And, you know, one time early on, it was the school, it was one of them, they were battling over chancellors back before the Rudy crew was in, and they were fighting who's going to be the school's chancellor, and they were changing the whole way the schools were being run. And Rudy's, his big thing was he's not political. You know, Rudy likes to say he's doing this that everybody
else,
all the liberals are political because, you know, the liberals are beholden to special interests of blacks, women, gays, et cetera, and that Rudy is apolitical. He's just a guy who wants to run the city as efficiently as possible and make the trains run on time, et cetera, et cetera. More of the cast
right,
is showing up.
Cast members
bad
have
reputation.
Arrived.
And, so he's like, if you go there, I remember asking him a question like, you know, Mr. Mayor, you know, you just fired half the school board, or you just fired this former chancellor, and you're bringing in another guy, and you know, you're preventing them from teaching about condoms and AIDS in the schools and all these kind of things. And that's political. You're being political. And, you know, he would become enraged. Absolutely enraged. I mean, like, how dare you say I'm political? And I realized at that point on, he hated being called political.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know? He hates being equated to the KKK, too.
That, too, yeah. He hates it. And he is political. I mean, give me a break. He's not just for, like, nice, efficient running of the city so the trains run on time. Like, that's
but
like,
why is
not
he dressing
political.
Up like the Lion King?
He's trying to be like, you know, New York, you know, Broadway.
He's trying. No,
When was the last time you were at a Broadway place? And so we have the cast members of a wonderful production, live production, who are here. Hi, here, let's hook
this
everybody
Barbara
up.
And Kelly.
Barbara and Kelly, how you doing?
I'm doing
hi.
Well.
Hi.
Thanks.
Hello, WBAI listeners.
These are two dancers from Bad Reputation.
Right. Two of our 12 dancers.
That's right.
But ultimately, what Giuliani hates the most is when you get inside information about something that's going on with the police department, and then you drop it like a bomb on them at a press conference. And that was the funniest thing, was somebody faxed us, you know, a BAI here, the fax whirs, and we get a message one day that, by the way, you know, I work for the corrections department, and I hate the government. And do you know that the cops have this, you know, the cops in Staten Island have this black guy they've been torturing in the back for the last week, and they haven't even put him through the system yet, and he wound up in the hospital. And maybe we got him over here at Rikers Island, and we were totally blown away by it, and maybe BAI would be interested.
Wow.
And then we go run down to City Hall, the first press conference that afternoon. And I hold a piece of paper in front of me, which is actually a faxed document right from the jail hospital. And I say, well, this says so-and-so was beaten, arrested, and it claims he was, after he was arrested, he was beaten and sodomized by the police, and which actually was on the document. And it was an official medical document. And I remember asking Giuliani that. It was at his year-ender. And
it was
after
the Lima case.
Another person was sodomizing.
Right.
What's with the police already with sodomy?
They've lost their minds.
Well, they denied that this happened. It was at the precinct there in North Staten Island. And so I read it to him, the document that I had. And they'd been asking him one softball question after another. It's called a year-ender. Towards the end of the year, he gives a press conference in which the media allows him to say what a great guy he is and what all the great things he's done all year, and they don't even ask him any embarrassing questions at all.
And you.
I stood up.
And you.
Totally inappropriately.
Totally inappropriately. And say, what about this guy who's claiming another Luima that he was sodomized by the cops in Staten Island. And at that point, Giuliani, there was silence. Giuliani angrily walked from one end of the stage that he was on, and he walked back to me, and he just stared, and he goes, "That is so irresponsible!" And he starts, screaming,
"I have no control.
That is so irresponsible!"
Right, it is totally irresponsible of you as a journalist to
mention sodomy. Constantly bring up sodomy all the time.
And I taped it, and what's funny is I never, even after he denied it, afterwards I asked Safer straight on about it. He denied it, but I didn't, about a week or two later, I was at a conference of defense lawyers, which for the first time ever, the Staten Island prosecutor, the DA in Staten Island, actually addressed this group of defense attorneys. And afterwards I walked up and he was very "Oh yes, you want to interview me? Oh wonderful, you little boy, thank you." You know, and I take the microphone and I said, "What about that sodomy case at the police in Staten Island?" What's his name, Murphy or something, the guy out in the DA on Staten Island, and he said that was a lie. They tried to say that guy lied. And actually the guy who made the claim was then later charged with filing a false report. I mean, I don't know if he filed a false report or not, but I guess we'll never know. But nothing ever went with that. But I got a lot of calls. I mean, the phones rang off the hook, and it was pretty funny on tape. And we could play the tape again sometime.
Yeah,
Rudy's freaking
hysterical.
Out. He just couldn't take it. He doesn't like hard questions.
We'd like to hear from our listeners.
212-209-2900. We're getting a lot.
Yeah, we're talking about bad reputation.
Bad reputation, and we're getting a call coming in. And another one of these touch.
Well, let's play.
212-209-2900.
Should I play? We could play. Oh, let's play Fool on Devi.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see.
What
one,
number
two,
is that?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Track 9. This is Bina Sharif as Fool on Devi, yeah. India's famous bandit queen, with music by Chris Rail and Deep Singh.
Let's play a couple minutes of this. 212-209-2900.
All right, call us up.
And call us up.
Panchod, Mother Chod, I am Phoolan Devi. Oh, Panchod, Mother Chod, I'm Phoolan Devi. I was a poor woman without education. I was 13 then. In the village, when something bad happened, the women were kept inside their houses, in their kitchens. I would ask, "Why does this happen to me?" My father would say, "Why does this happen to her all the time?" I would go to the temple and pray to Mata Durga, the one who aids the ones with no one else by their side. I used to ask her, "Why did you send me into the sorrowful world? Please take me far away from this cruel place." I haven't forgotten the past. These part of my life still cause me great sorrow. The past cannot be erased. If only the world had taken great interest in my life when I was a child, things would have been different. Once a girl has been raped, she's a mock woman, a spoiled woman. And others who know that believe it is acceptable to rape her too. Many of these women have been forced into prostitution because of this. Women don't support each other. And even when they do, they are still confounded by men. If I'm being beaten by my husband and the woman next door hears this, she will go to her husband for help. The husband will say, "Why don't you shut the fuck up, woman? What gives you the right to meddle in the affairs of others?" Old men looking at young girls and then raping them. This makes me very angry. My mother used to say, "This life will pass by just like that. How many people are you going to save? Why are you interfering with other people?" When I became a bandit and had power, I made a mess of these people, and I saw to it that they were really punished. If I heard that a man had hurt a young girl, I'd cut off their nose. I saw to it that they had justice. I exercised my power to punish as needed. After I became a dacoit, a bandit, no one had the guts to speak badly of me. In fact, I had several proposals.